As a little introduction for this evening's talk, I would like just to mention what was discussed in a meeting we had in 1996, so 10 years ago, in Ekon. If I recall, Father was there, a meeting of the superiors. We're discussing in general, of course it's our main concern, priests and priestly matters. For me, as a very young superior, it was very interesting to see all these wise, more senior superiors discuss this question of immaturity, question of problems with priests, either with young priests soon after their ordination in the society. Unfortunately, we have had some problems with young priests, even newly ordained or in the first year of their priesthood. And the discussion starting with this, so we focus on seminary rectors. I say, wow, are we doing something wrong in our seminary? If a young man who's a priest, after 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, leaves the society, or are we lacking something? And to be the seminary rectors, they say, well, we do our best. We have a curriculum set by Archbishop Lefebvre. Priests have some quite a much experience. But we receive young men in our seminary who are 20, 25 years old. And at 20, 25 years old, you are trained. You're grown up. So you cannot change a whole personality when they come in the seminary. They should be already prepared for the seminary. So then we had among us also some school principals, some of our big schools in the society. And since some of our priests come from our schools, so then we turn to the school principals and say, what about you, school principals? Is it your fault if a priest then leaves later on? And they say, well, you know, we receive the children in our schools, even boarding schools, let's say, speaking about boarding schools, and we have them for so many years, but of course, at weekend they go home or whatever it is. It's not a closed system. And I remember a famous letter of Marie-Gabrielle Simoulin, who was writing to the parents, the mother of Fonjo, the Dominican sisters in France, writing to the parents how they had problems. I'm talking, this letter was back in the, I think, mid-80s, something like this, how trying to teach all week-long girls to be girls, and there had been stories of girls on Friday night in the train on the way home, putting on jeans, getting the Walkman out and listening to rock music. And these are our girls, I mean, traditional Catholic girls. And so the mother was writing to the parents and said, listen, we have to work together. We cannot do everything. And so our priests who handle boys' schools, well, they said something similar. I mean, we try to give the principles to the students, but there's also the family. In the mind of the students, the family has a preeminence, comes first, the parents come first, obviously. So the problem, it was put this way, we're still discussing among our four bishops, were there talking about these things, and what can we do? Because we want the elite of the young men, those who are to be the priests of tomorrow. How can we really prepare them? So is homeschooling the answer? And we discussed a bit of homeschooling. But as Bishop Williamson said, and well, first of all, many of our priests have to acknowledge sometimes homeschooling goes very well, and you have some parents who really protect their children very well, but there's been, in all the countries and all the scenarios, there's been some crisis and some failures. I would say at 18 years old, 20 years old, the child just leaves, and there's been cases where they've even just stopped practicing. I remember Bishop Williamson saying, you cannot build even a 100-foot wall around your house and educate your children. It's part of our fallen nature to want to get out and see the world if you've been too enclosed. And so this was going on, and quite interesting discussion. And so we went down to the family, of course. It starts with the family. It starts at the crib, okay? The bottom line was what is required in these youth is a strong character. We need the education, of course, is necessary, but among the key elements of the soul of these young men coming to us to become priests, we want young men who have character, who have strong virtue, because this is one of the big, big problems today. An application of what we were discussing, I found one time traveling in Canada, on the cover or the main topic of Time magazine, Canadian edition, was, I have not seen the word before, they call them the Twixters, which are this new section, new category among today's people, which is after the childhood and the teenage years and before married life. But then a new section, which is now from 20 to 30 plus, which is young men, young women who are diplomed with so many degrees and so many qualifications, but they're still at home with mommy and daddy, and they work at McDonald's, they might have PhDs, but whatever, you know, or they cannot settle. They're changing partners so many times, and then they end up coming at home because they know mom and dad will not reject them. And they're there, they're happy, they're at home, but they don't want to commit themselves to something in life. So they're uncommitted, super qualified young people, and the society is becoming fuller and fuller of these kind of people. It is becoming a problem, a major problem. I was just, again, last summer in Switzerland speaking to a hotel manager, small hotel in the Swiss village, and he said this was the worst year this year, last winter, because of the employees who cannot even respect a contract, who cannot even keep the rules of what they have signed. They don't care. And with that one, in their 20s. It is a problem. It's quite universal. I'm still in the general introduction of what I want to say to you. One of our priests, one of our senior priests, Father Delagneau, he's in France. He's been giving retreats for the last 25 years, at least. And so he has seen a whole generation passing through. He's been in one place, this retreat house we have in France, the Pointe, one of our first retreat houses, one of our most famous retreat houses. And he has seen parents coming, and then down the line, children coming, so doing the retreat. But he wrote this little editorial in his retreat magazine, which I would just like to mention to you, because it is, he puts the finger on something very fierce. That's why we're all here, you and I, which is something we traditional Catholics have to realize seriously. The general idea is that many times your children will not follow. Our children in general do not follow your conviction as traditional Catholics. And this is worldwide. This is what he says here. Many Catholics of tradition have thought that by keeping the traditional Mass, by making sacrifices to put their children in good schools, their duty was accomplished. And therefore, the Christian future of their children was guaranteed. You've done your job. Unfortunately, we have to admit that such is not the result. Many parents, even young parents, now begin to realize, but without knowing what to do and how to react. Others don't want to face it by fear of having to do more efforts, and efforts which they don't want to do. But the situation is more than worrying, it is distressing. And he speaks of his own experience through retreats. We have seen a youth which is far from being at the height of the task which falls on it to rebuild the Christian society. That's what you want your children to do. You want your children to have families like you have. That's what parents want to see among their children. The fruits which we have under our own eyes are without proportion with the sacrifices of parents and educators. Visibly, something is going wrong, and we have to react before it's too late. Or else, after two generations, we will be swallowed up by the world. No, just one little bit, an extra paragraph here. What we see in these youth of 18 to 30 years old is, first, a great ignorance in relation to the crisis of society and of the church. Not just the church, but also of society, what's going on in the world. Not that they have not been taught, but because of the lack of interest on their part. They are protected and follow in their great lines the orientation of their parents, but they are incapable of explaining deeply why. Why not the new mass? What's wrong with Vatican II, with the one world government? They have not received this instinct that gives them the desire to study by themselves, to form themselves, because they have not had to fight, to defend their position, to resist, which is what you have to do. If we are all in tradition, because we have to pull out of our parishes, pull out of our schools, of our cities, of our countries, and move and make an effort. You have made that effort. Now the next generation, they have, which is great. I mean, we want to give the children the best, but we have to be careful. That's the general idea that he's trying to put across, is that they will have to fight as well in some way. They have to put some effort in this whole history that we are living. In brief, they are a little bit annoyed, or they're a bit, bored of being different from the rest. And they would like to be like everybody else. Why are we traditional Catholic and so on? So I will actually use one of his little booklets for the main part of this talk. He sees there's a problem, that there's something, and just simply this evening I just want to address this issue, since you are in full-time in education as parents, as teachers. These are things to focus as you are handling these youthful souls. Pius XII, in an elocution to teachers, to the Italian Catholic Union of Secondary Teachers, September 4, 1949. So he speaks of, to the educators of today, you who draw safe rules from the past, what is the ideal of a man that you have to prepare for tomorrow? You find him fundamentally outlined in the perfect Christian. But I skipped that, I just want to quote just a few lines. Encourage them. Them is the youth, that your children and your students. Tell them that the church and society are expecting a lot from them, that there is a great deal of good to be accomplished and many noble enterprises to be undertaken. Here's Pius XII, and he will give you the qualities he wants the youth to have when they walk out of your homes, when they walk out of your schools. Religious, honest, cultured, frank and active. Thus, we would like young people to leave school, the young people whom families and society entrust, or better, whom God entrusts to you, because before the family and society, souls belong to God, to Christ, and the church by a preeminent right of origin. Have courage and confidence. Though the enterprise is great and the goal arduous, nothing is lacking for the Christian educator to obtain it. You have sufficient human means available, but above all, you are rich in supernatural help furnished by grace. You and your pupils can draw abundantly from the fruitful torrent of that grace in the sacraments and prayer. Beautiful line from Pius XII. So, I would like this evening to go over this little booklet, which is written by Father Delagnos in French. We've used it in the Philippines, and hearing different superiors and Bishop Fillet and getting some feedback from all over the world. It is absolutely universal, what I'm telling you. It's everywhere. Maybe here in New Zealand, it is in Alaska, it is in Japan, it is in India, it is in Africa, it is everywhere. There's a big problem. So Father has this little booklet. It advises to the youth from 18 to 25 on the acquisition of maturity and the choice of a state of life. Well, I will not speak about the second part, but this question of acquisition of maturity, I think it is one of the major fruit you want to see your children acquire. Because, you know, there may be top class students, straight A's, they may have all the knowledge here, but you're afraid of letting them out because they don't have the virtue down here. They don't have the strength, they don't have the equipment, or you may be afraid they don't have, they may have it. I mean, the goal is to work all together, parents, teachers, and priests, and all work together with this gentle growth, these gentle souls. It's the most delicate task, obviously, is the Artium to influence these young souls. I'll just give a few points. Don't hesitate if you have any questions as I'm speaking to interrupt me and ask questions. So in a very short first section of this first part of the booklet, he speaks about the very near future. The very near future is what's going to happen after school, or in the years after school, after we leave home, these first, say, 10 years maybe, when we have to decide what we're going to do and what orientation we will take for the rest of our life, normally. You get married for life, usually a religious life, you enter in your mind, in your heart, you're giving yourself to God, it's for life. There may be indication of providence which say it's not for you, go back home or get married, but at least in the heart it is for life. So he speaks here just in general of the qualities required to become a good religious, a good priest. Both are defined by the spirit of sacrifice, it's the gift of self. Then he speaks of, I'm just giving headline, he will develop in a moment, the qualities required to become a good spouse, a good husband, a good wife. As you know, you parents, you have to train souls, I mean, your children, as we Pius XII said a moment ago, and as you know very well, they belong to God first. They are His children first. They're loaned to you, like the talents in the parable, and you have to fructify them. So, but you cannot give what you don't have. And one should enter marriage with a great deal of souls and a good training on one's duty and having acquired virtues for this. Marriage has nothing to do with sensuality. Archbishop Lefebvre used to say marriage is a school of chastity where you learn to control your body. Not everything is allowed, obviously, and God sometimes intervenes and asks great sacrifices from parents. You know, you're in marriage. Okay? Harmonious union between the two complementary beings, husband and wife. Generosity, self-denial, gift of self, all for the common good. It's not automatic. This is what the youth has to realize. These things just don't happen. They're acquired. And that's the general idea. To become a good father, a good mother, it's not something you want improvises. It already requires a certain personal perfection. Because the children are the image of their parents. They absorb family examples, to discern the different temperaments, the different characters of your children. You know, you don't deal with each child the same way when it's down to the nitty gritty, you know, the different temperaments. But all education consists, I would say, especially in transmitting the faith and your personal conviction to your children. Again, you cannot give what you don't have. So, husband and wife, father and mother, but also the qualities required for a good social life. Man is a social being. We live together. Here we are a group. A school is a group. A parish is a group. So to render the relation between the various members of society enjoyable, respect of authority, of institutions, of persons. There's an attitude of critique, of insolence, of carelessness, of which is very unfortunate, very damageable for oneself and for others, for society. You know how slander, calumny, and all these things, there's the gospel about it, there's the cockle, how it can destroy a family, destroy a group of any institution. Gratitude is a very important social virtue, to learn how to appreciate, how to say thank you. Affability and generosity and all the human relationships. And then it says also qualities to exercise a good professional activity. So we have at home, we have among families, and then we have at work. At the various levels, we need virtues, we need qualities, because you spend most of your time then in your professional activity, whether you're a truck driver or a teacher or a priest or a lawyer or a doctor. Everywhere we need the Christian virtues. And the Christian virtues are good for everything. A virtue is a habit. It's not an act. You may do an act of patience now, but it's not a virtue. Virtue, you acquire it by repeating the act. And then he goes into more detail. He gives 10 points. I'll mention some of them. Some are quite interesting. I mean, it's common sense, but I think that they need to be mentioned because, as I told you, we in the society, as our role of training priests and the future priests of tomorrow, and in our schools, we come across these problems. I'll give you one example. We had one of our a young seminarians. He's been 5 years in the seminary. You can imagine, think of how many years before, I don't know who it is, but I've been told it's a very real case. How many years before the seminary was he thinking of becoming a priest? 5, 10 years, perhaps. He joins the seminary. I don't know if he went through one of our schools, but come to our seminary. 5 years. And at the end of 5th year, he's to be ordained subdeacon. At which step, one makes the vow of chastity. So you choose. Either you serve God, or, and then you don't get married, or you can back out. Okay, but once you step forward, that's it. So, after so many years of thinking of dreaming to become a priest, he says, I can't. You just block. And you quit, and you left. And there are cases like this. So, who's responsible? Anyway, that's the question of cases like this. Tragedy. So, qualities to be acquired. First, he gives some, again, in general, and then he goes into more detail. More detail. First of all, he says, the first thing the child must realize, must want, is wants to, when we reach our late teens and early 20s, to want to leave teenage years, leave our childhood. How many young adults today are behaving like teenagers? They haven't left their teenage years. Computer games and God knows what, the technology and spending hours browsing the net and all these things, but neglecting one's duty, even going to bed. And he's mentioned later on about self-discipline and keeping a timetable and respecting it. But how many of our, and we all know, I mean, I think most of us have occasionally or frequently access to internet or have to use internet. It's fascinating. It's attracting. It's magnetic. And you have to do a research or you browse, and there's a certain feeling of power with this internet. You're open. You can access anything. At one click, poof, you have it. You go anywhere in the world, you know, discoveries and what do you think. And that's the danger, and it's certainly one of the causes. I will not mention here the causes of this immaturity, but I mentioned it last Tuesday. There's no doubt that one of the major causes of the youth of today compared to the youth 20 years ago or before, when you were young, is this overwhelming presence of technology. There's no doubt about TV first, but then now we have computers, now we have cell phones, we have laptops, we have digital everything, and it's killing a lot of basic, natural elements, virtues or characteristics of a normal human growth. Something has come in which did not exist before. Well, that's certainly one of the elements. So, the first general quality Father mentioned is to want to leave that period of our life, which is our teenage years. We're becoming an adult, and so some teenage things, we should not be stuck with them anymore. We're grown up, and so we should live as grown up. Towards the age of 17, 18, they have to acquire this maturity. And it's, you see, our teenagers, I mean, I deal with them in Singapore as well, we have the same problem, and perhaps, well, we have, it's the wealth of Singapore is, for us is frightening, you know. And I've told this to the parents as well, but the teenager wants to be independent. he mentioned here some of the features of the teenagers, which we all know, but I mentioned them. The teenager wants, you know, doesn't care about the advice that's given to him. He knows more than others. I'm going to lead my life the way I want. So that there's a manifestation of a greater independence. He easily becomes insolent towards those who have done everything for them, parents and others. Okay. In order to show that he's there, that he's becoming a young adult, he will contradict. Teenagers love to contradict. Sometimes just for the sake of contradicting. And they don't even believe what they're saying, but they just want to see how you're going to react. You know. It is in order to manifest himself in his behavior, in his dress, in his hairstyle, in his language, earrings, and all these things, you know. Actually, I should say rings, because not just on the ears, everywhere. What is he? He's drawing attention on himself. He seeks to appear. He wants to appear because he is not yet, in other words. It's the appearance before being. In his humor, he is often unstable. He does not know really why. He does not want to help. He seeks an easy life. He lets himself live. He does not think on himself, on his life, on his future. So these are some of the characteristics, obviously. You recognize some of them. Okay? It's universal, it's kind of fallen nature. First of all, to want to get out, to want to grow up. But that to want, see, we will see all throughout, we always come back to want, which is exactly what St. Thomas was saying, the first requirement to become a saint is to want it. And to want it again, and to want it again and again. That's the will. Okay? It's the will. Second, a little bit more general point, the first form of maturity, it is to want to save our soul. The first. To take conscience of that, and to act in consequence. In other words, to want to always remain in the state of grace. Very interesting, it's very true. It's very true. I'll read you the text of Pius the 12th again here. It is therefore, the heading is The Essence and Importance of Christian Education. Sorry, Pius 11th, Divini Ius Magistri, on the Pius 11th on Education, 1929. It is therefore as important to make no mistake in education as it is to make no mistake in the pursuit of the last goal, with which the whole work of education is intimately and necessarily connected. In fact, since education consists essentially in preparing man for what he must be and what he must do here below, in order to attain the sublime goal for which he was created, it is clear that there can be no true education which is not wholly directed to man's last end, and that in the present order of providence, since God has revealed himself to us in the person of his only begotten Son, who alone is the way, the truth, and the life. Therefore, there can be no ideally perfect education which is not Christian education. A famous passage of Pius 11. And that is why, I mean, you know yourself, I mean, it's these ideas of education today, which is just filling the mind with data to know things, to know, but their brains, and as I said, they have degrees, but they're maybe ignorant of their faith. But even if they know their faith, some of our kids who have gone through our schools, who go through a crisis in their 20s, they know the faith, they know the catechism, but they're in a state of rebellion and they don't have the grace, they don't want the grace. So formation of the mind alone is not enough. Formation of skills alone is not enough. How sad it is if you start reading the life of the great musician, the great composers. How sad it is after hearing a beautiful symphony or concerto or whatever, you start reading the life of the man and how many of them were living in a state of grace? How many of them are saved? Well, God alone knows. But although they had these exquisite skills. Beethoven and Mozart, who did not have enough minutes in a day to write his music because his hand could not go as fast as his mind was composing. It does not necessarily make a person virtuous. Art is part of our life, music is part of our life, but music does not render one necessarily good. It's an intellectual habit. It's an art. And so it's necessary, but there's a higher formation. There's a passage here from the famous Marshal Pétain, who was in the Second World War in France. There is, at the foundation of our education system, a deep illusion. It is to believe that it is sufficient to instruct the mind in order to have trained heart and solid character. Nothing is more false and more dangerous than that idea. The human heart does not naturally go to goodness. Human will does not naturally go to firmness, to constancy, to courage. They need to attain these and to fix themselves in them, a vigorous discipline. So he said that about 50 years ago. The training of the will, and to want the first, it should be our first act of a child, the first conscious act of a child, and it should be our last, is to want God, to want our last end. And so, and all the education must tune the will, whether you know the child wants to do geography or art or whatever, all these are only means to reach the last end. That's what we learned in the retreat. Everything is a means to go to God. But keeping the end in mind always. So, to want to grow out of teenage lifestyle, to want to save one's soul and to take it seriously. And thirdly, he says, to want to succeed in life. I mean, we want to have successful marriages, and we want to be happy in our vocation. We want to be well in whatever we do. We want it. We want it to work. Nobody wants a sad life. Nobody wants to be miserable. There will always be trials and failures in life, but we must have this desire to succeed, the desire to get there. And such a successful life is a life which draws the admiration of others as well. It is a life which blossoms. It is because it has some solid basis, some good principle, good decision. It is a fruitful life, but that is not improvised. A happy marriage is not something improvised. You see what happens when they throw themselves in marriage without preparation. It's a disaster. Generally speaking, it requires a long preparation, effort, sustained effort, and to eliminate the enemies of our perfectioning, of our improvement, and to work constantly to acquire the qualities which we need for our whole life. To have a successful life means to be able to renounce oneself, to fight, to destroy all form of selfishness in self in order to give. Every one of us, we want to give ourselves to one another in marriage, to your children, to God, we want to give ourselves. But that requires to forget ourselves, to put ourselves second, and to put the other one first. And that is the heart of charity, is to give. If anybody wants to walk after me, let him renounce himself, take his cross and follow me. So, and then he goes on to these various points. He gives 10. And I repeat, this priest has given retreats for 25 years. He has seen sometimes retreats of 50, 60 people. They've seen, I don't know how many, tens of thousands. Ordinary people of all ranks, all classes of society, all professions, everything. And these are the fruit of this long experience. Firstly, to be in the world, we are in the world, but at the same time, to be not of the world, to be different from the world. This is it's a very delicate and important point. And I'm sure you hear your children saying it. I've heard it as well in these various places I have been. Parents, speaking to us about their children being different. Father, especially in Ireland, when I was there, I remember visiting these families for the first time back in 1987-88. The mother saying, you know, Father, my girl is the only girl wearing a skirt in the school. Or my girls are the only one doing this, not going out at weekends with guys, and they don't go to the parties, and the peer pressure is terrible in these other schools. And for the youth to be different, that's what he's saying here, to accept without being isolated, that's the tough thing. And here you're blessed. You're blessed, so much blessed here. Small is not perfect, but count your blessing, because they're immense, they're immense. So for many, dilemma, this difficulty is making friends who are not traditional Catholic or not Catholic or just pagans, and at the same time remaining traditional Catholic. It's a difficult period in your family life, I know, it happens, and you cannot always keep your children in, because if you do too much, they're just going to fly away. And then what? Then what? I know one case, the girl, just recently, the girl, after she was home taught, she followed a few years, I think, in one of our schools. She even taught a bit of music, piano and some art, I think, and various things. But she just went into her crisis when she was, 21, 22. And she took off now for the last 2 years. I think the mother may know where she is, but when you have your 20-year-old girl gone with somebody somewhere you don't know, and this girl had thought of a vocation. She even made an attempt for a few months of a vocation. And then there was a clash with the parents, and she slammed the door, she walked away. A very sound Catholic family, 7 children, traditional Catholic from start. So it can happen. We want to protect them, but at the same time, you have to realize one day they'll escape your hands, and then what? That's this point that the Father is mentioning, this maturity. You want to be able to see your child coming back or keeping in touch with you, and oof, everything's fine. Everything's in order. All the principle I have given, while she, he is living then. And the fruits of those who are trying to ally with the world are there. Vocations are becoming rarer, and marriage, even some of our traditional Catholic marriages are very frail. How many of our young spouses don't have the sense of responsibility, of generosity, of organization, of self-denial? How many of young women are superficial and don't want to be mother, don't even have a sense of order in the house or things like this. Humble generosity. When it starts like this, one storm blows everything away. So we have to straighten this thing up. The world makes you lose respect for yourself, for others, and for God through its leisure, vacation, its fashions, its ideas. Well, we have to restore that respect. The world makes you lose the admiration for effort, for duty, for virtue. The world will criticize those who are trying to live the virtue, especially when it's time for weekend activities or entertainment. And the youth will go, will not go, will go, will not go. It's tough, it's tough. The world throws you into this, what is ugly, what is neglected. You see these kids today, the way they're dressed, the way they've lost the sense of beauty, the sense of true value. The world gets you used to waste your time. Technology, all this modern technology does that in a professional way. Waste of time, it's incredible. You know, the Screwtape letters, and one of the letters of this, the senior devil to a junior devil, that's the Screwtape letters of that. It's a spirituality upside down. It's quite interesting. There was one case, I remember one letter, where Screwtape, the senior devil, says, after hearing that the young devil failed, his client resisted. And he said, well, it did not work, okay. But if you cannot make him do evil things, at least make him waste his time. He says, for example, spending long hours in a cold room, staring at a dead fire. You know. That was written back in, 1910, 1920s, He thought much better now, with TV and now with internet and all these things. And the waste of time, is unbelievable. We're talking about they made statistics sometime up to 6, 7, 8 hours per day browsing or on a computer or listening to rock, of course, but music, but with the technology, best technology. It's not the most updated one, though. So we're multiplying time now. So, the world is making you do all these things. The world is making you give in to your defects. What is the secret of life, of a fulfilled life, successful life? Is it God, or the world, or God? Scripture says, don't model yourself on the present world. Do not love the world, nor what is in the world. He who is a friend of the world is an enemy of God. So, first attitude vis-a-vis the world. The world is the great, you said at the beginning, we are in it, we cannot escape. You cannot escape 100%. You can escape pretty much, but it's difficult. So we have to have a firm attitude vis-a-vis the pop music, TV, internet, drugs, alcohol, evening, flirting, night, all these things, all the fashion. All this should be excluded. You must have very clear principles for one who wants to become and remain a good Christian. On the other hand, organize healthy activities. I think that's what we're trying to do, the Father's trying to do with the priests, with the youth and the families. Interesting thing. Because if you take away, you have to replace. You cannot leave a void. That's classic. Find activities and find things to do. And he comes back here, another aspect of the spirit of the world, besides disorder in leisures and entertainment, is the spirit of criticism, of mockery. It's the wound of malice which we have from original sin. Our soul is, instead of wanting the good of the other, we want him evil. We put down and we criticize, we sneer at the others. To escape from the spirit of the world is also to love a certain poverty or a certain simplicity in life. Money makes one happy when you have the basics. If you have, and I tell you, I see it in Singapore, we see kids who are spoiled, and it is so hard to try to put them straight, because they have money easily, big job and all these things. The parents are trying, but it's difficult. Materialism is it leads to self, very, very fast selfishness. So a certain detachment among the things that we use. Maturity consists in dominating and submitting the material to the spiritual. And thus, in practice, to be content with little. We don't need all these things. I remember one time going to Hong Kong, visiting a family. And there was, they had two kids. And they put me in the toy room. The spare bed was in the toy room. I said, all right, what can you say? But for two kids, and I was looking at all the things they had. And I remember going out with the family, and the boy was 4 years old, and he had, thousands of dollars of games and all the DVDs and the movies, everything you want a kid to have. Well, he was playing with a little plastic car. He was happy with his little 10-cent car. That's all he wanted. And that was that. And he spent all day in the car. He was there. That was his happiness. It was not all these gadgets, all these things. And we see it in our poor countries. Father Jackson taught in India. We see it in the Philippines as well. Children can be content with very, very little. Yes.
Was it possible that those parents gave those toys to the kids because they were deprived in their childhood and they wanted?
That is a very true situation. I've seen it elsewhere. That is maybe one of the causes. Parents did not have it. They would like to give their children what they did not have. Another is parents don't know how to educate. And they just think by giving them toys, it will keep them busy. Switch on the TV and then you go and do your thing. And the kid is there in front of the TV for hours. That's not the education. You sit down on the floor and play with your kids and go walking, go on a bicycle with them and do things with them. But this relation, and we see, and now, you know, these parents who precisely think that by giving the child everything he's asking, you make the child happy, later on when they're 15, 20, the parents have no control because they have just fed selfishness. There's no spirit of sacrifice on there. That is the first point, to be in the world, but not of the world. Second point, an interesting one, to admire somebody and to have a passion for something, to have a model. Look at the youth today, it'll be a rock star, it'll be a sport hero, a champion, a tennis player, whatever. But to have a strong admiration for somebody, and of course, because admiration provokes imitation. Okay, we're done. Yes.
I'm surprised you quoted something from Marshall Petain.
Yes.
If you're saying don't be of the world and admire someone, and I mean, wasn't he executed as a traitor? I mean, once upon a time he was a hero, but didn't he become a traitor in the end?
A traitor for whom? For those who wanted a Masonic France, he was a traitor, yes.
Well, once a traitor for the Allies. A traitor for everyone who fought against the Nazis.
No, that's not true. Okay. The French government, that was saying 1939, fled and left France, did not defend the country, and said to Lord Marshal Petain, he was the legitimate one designed by the French government, and he had a bit on the ground, he said, stop the slaughter, you know, and then let us rebuild. But he did deal with the Allies, he dealt with the American army in Northern Africa, you know, and that was against the ceasefire, but he did it because he was, but he did not deal with De Gaulle in London, who was a puppet of the Freemasons. And Petain had outlawed the Freemasons and the Communists, and with that he had the force of the world against him, you know. But he did work with Marshal Leclerc in Northern Africa, who worked with the Americans, and not with, with De Gaulle. And that's the reason why De Gaulle never entered into NATO, because he could not stand the fact that the American generals did not consider him to be a real general. He had only a microforce, that's all he had. He did not have an army, De Gaulle. But the American general dealt with the armies in Northern Africa, and so that was with Petain and not with with the court. He's not a traitor. He had against him the Freemasons and the Communists, but not the real country. So it's just about that.
Did he collaborate with the Germans? Though? I mean,
Well, I think we're going off topic here. Remember what he said, but the. No, we'll continue here. To have a model, Father Delagneau says, because when you have a model, you want to imitate. Ideal models for all of us are the saints. Saints who are people like us, really, who live in the world with difficulties. You read the story of a family, of the Martin family, and how difficult it was even to have the children and to lose four children in young age, having breast cancer, and then she still wanted to have a ninth one, and she had it, and that last one was Saint Therese. To read stories of these families is something uplifting and admirable, and we want to see as much as possible we can imitate whatever is imitable in these great people. Father also mentioned to have a passion for something. Here, well, it can be a passion in the sense of a hobby, I think, a manual activity or intellectual activity which gives a competence, which gives a satisfaction, a certain self-confidence, and protects from a lot of evil, which is idleness, superficiality, and worldly temptation. It can be music, embroidery, painting, gardening, working wood, carpentry, or study of a history or science, whatever. Something that you really, a great interest, that will occupy your free time. That put your mind on something. That's important because it will put you into reality and will also help you to go through tough times in life, difficult moments in life, and also have a healthy recreation and therefore find balance. Thirdly, to have a discipline of life. And discipline is firstly a timetable. Timetable, he who has regular schedule can do a lot of things and easily. You dominate, you manage your time. You have a calm life and well-filled. We all know there's nothing worse than the lack of organization than chaos. It annoys and also improvisation. And that is part of maturity. And we see our youth today, I mean, they go to bed whenever they want, many of them, and they have problem getting up, problem doing things on time, and handing an assignment on time, these kind of things. In practice, times to go to bed, time to get up, times for piety, for duty, for work, time to tidy our room. Discipline is also promptness to do what we're supposed to do. Promptness is the universal test of any virtue. How quick are you to practice the virtue? Well, that's the test of the degree of that virtue in you. If it takes you 1 day, 2 days, 3 days to accept a sacrifice, well, you know, you accept it at the end, fine. You have some patience or your resignation to God's will. If it takes 1 second to say, okay, yes, my God, well, the degree is far higher. A timetable, promptness to do what we're supposed to do, starting on time, finishing on time, to keep that. Perseverance in whatever we do. Perseverance. I mentioned a moment ago the wound of malice. You know, we have these four wounds that we inherited with original sin: ignorance, malice, weakness, and concupiscence. The wound of weakness is against the virtue of fortitude. Perseverance is part of the virtue of fortitude. And nowadays, certainly because of all these gadgets that we live with, people watching TV, you don't like the program, click, you change the program. Click, you watch 30 seconds, boring. Click, like a push-button mentality. And that develops a habit of not being able to concentrate, not being able to carry on something to the end. So they play on that. The fashion's always changing. So perseverance, no matter what, we have to persevere. If I start something, I finish it. Whether it's reading a book, whether it's the food on my plate for the children, you put that food on your plate, you finish it. If you don't want it, well, you don't. Next time you won't put it. No dessert until you finish it. Something you start, you finish. A game, I don't like this game anymore. And they quit. Finish the game. Don't just think of you, think of the others. They want to play as well. To try to finish what it is. Finish a homework. Of course, later on it's going to be to live your state of life until the end. You decided to get married, well, you go to the end. Till death do you part, and you're not allowed to kill the other. Okay. So perseverance. Discipline is also to do well what you have to do. Don't botch your work. Don't botch your, even if your children are doing the dishes at home or doing a homework, right? Do them well. Whatever you do, to learn to do it well. And not to be satisfied until it is well done. Just to do things rapidly, to botch it and come on just to have it done with, is not being responsible. It's trying to get rid of something. I just mentioned a few more things. He mentioned, fourthly, to acquire a healthy and balanced life. Here he speaks about the necessity of manual labor, manual work. We are body and soul, so we need to take care of our soul and take care of our body. Sport would come in here. We need to do exercise. Kids need to do sport to get all their muscles and get their life balanced. Silence, Father mentions here, silence, to learn how to live in silence, to learn how to study or to work in silence. How many are youth, perhaps ourselves sometimes, it's nothing wrong to have a bit of a background music, but it depends what kind of music. Okay. You have kids who are reading a book with headphones on, and when you listen to the music, how can you even think with that music on? But they cannot live in silence. God speaks through silence, and in silence our conscience like floats on the surface. That's why meditation is so good. to progress in the spiritual life, because we are true to ourselves in silence, and God speaks. But if there's noise and all these things, they may learn, they may memorize things, but it's going to be on the surface. Life in the countryside is certainly ideal and desirable, but not always possible, obviously. Fifthly, to acquire a solid piety. A solid piety, and then he goes on, all the various aspects of the spiritual life. Our duties towards God. For example, a little application of discipline and piety. First thing, getting out of bed, kneel down. It's a little exercise, but God is first in my life. And so give God the first place with the morning and evening prayers, before and after meals, the rosary, and so on. Love of neighbor with the various works of mercy, corporal and spiritual works of mercy. And of course we have to fight all the obstacles of all the temptations here. Reading, part of a good spiritual life and of maturity, is something that he has mentioned earlier on, but he comes back to it frequently, to love to read, and read good and serious books, and here in the field of our Christian life, to read solid books relating to our faith, to our religion. There's so much ignorance. When I went to China, one of the first times, to tell you, I mean, it's China. I'm just giving this because I've seen it. They have excusable reasons. They can be excused. But I said Mass in this house, and for many of them, it was the first traditional Mass. So we started talking a little bit about what can they do until the next Mass, which could be in 6 months' time. And these people are visited whenever we come. So we'll get together on Sunday and say the rosary and get some life to the saints and read a bit of catechisms or whatever. They say, Father, what's the life of the saints? And you're adults, they're 30, 40-year-old people. Catholics, those who asked me were, well, but it's China, I mean, it's China, they have no books. But I said, but you don't know about, I don't know, St. Anthony or, no, St. Teresa the Child Jesus, no, Don Bosco, no, never heard, you know. Wow. So, it's part of our education to know about the saints. We have saints, we have names of saints. We have saints every day. We go to Mass, there's some saints. In the Missal, there's so many saints. It's the communion of saints. They're in heaven. There's the souls in purgatory. But we need to live with these souls who are with God. So he gives a list of good books here. Next, sixth point. To acquire maturity, his father says, is to acquire a spirit of truth and of humility. And by this, he says here, a quote from Cardinal P, 1871. I'm convinced there is no man where there are no characters. That's what we're talking about, this maturity, the character. There are no characters where there are no principles, doctrines, statements. And there are no statements, doctrines, principles where there is not a deep religious faith and consequently a social faith. Cardinal P. What makes a man vir in Latin? Virtus, virtue. It's the same family of words. It's the strength. Virtue and veritas and truth. That gives us conviction in the mind, and then the virtue in the heart will give us what we need to walk forward. So youth have to read, and read a lot to acquire good, true principles, solid conviction. Often today, studies, university and all this is very long, but very often they do not teach to think. I'm sure the sisters and the fathers are trying to teach the children to reflect, to think about what they're learning, because that is the essential. In India, they can learn a book like this by heart. Indians have an extraordinary memory. They don't know how to think. We just started a little school there last June, thanks to the school principal of a big high school. And we've had very good rapport with this man, Catholic, he's been very, very helpful, he and his wife, to us. And one time we were talking about, well, I was there once, but Father Bluth and Father Summers have spoken to him many times, about precisely this problem in the Indian education, which is just to learn by heart. And he said, and he's been in the teaching world for decades, he said, I have to replace all my staff in order to do that. I'm going to have to start from the beginning again, because the teachers are not used to even to think themselves. And because they're in the system, and that's the way it works. They learn a language by learning pages by heart, and then they just spit it out. If you ask the next line, they don't know, because they haven't learned it by heart. So, to learn how to think, then the Father gives a whole list of good books about what is happening in the world, liberalism, the church, and all these things. A method of work, he speaks about how to work, how to take notes, how to organize one's work. Seventh point, to acquire the nobility of heart, the gift of self, to be generous. Then he speaks about the works of mercy. Eighth point, to acquire a perfect purity. Chastity, the word chastity, is a military word. Castra, the Roman camp. And castitas is the Roman discipline. It's a word which is borrowed from the Roman life, the Roman army, which is world famous. Many of you are probably in the Legion of Mary. Well, the Legion of Mary is based on the Roman army and the true devotion. But this discipline, so a chaste person is somebody whose soul can discipline the body, and whose body is in order to dominate one's passion. How can we speak of maturity if we are slaves of our passion? And that's why we said, Father said, the first sign of maturity is to want to save one's soul and to want to stay in a state of grace. How can we lead other people's lives? How can we want to direct? How can we want to send people to heaven if we ourselves are in sin? So the first maturity is for ourselves, the victory over ourselves. If somebody wants to come after me, let him deny himself. The whole spiritual exercise of St. Ignatius, he says in the very title, spiritual exercise, which has for their goal the conquest of self. We're always back to this. Purity is a form of love and of respect. A little Mario Goretti, 11 and a half. Imagine your children, 11 and a half years old, being approached and bullied by a 20-year-old boy, farm boy, and she's able to say, no, that is a sin, we cannot do that. You're going to go to hell. She was not even thinking of herself. She says, Alexandro, you will go to hell if you do that. 11-year-old, she had been to communion just a few times. A poor, uneducated girl. She had maturity at 11 years old because she knew that eternity was to be gained by her sacrifice. Purity, chastity, implies respect of one's body, which is the temple of the Holy Ghost. And also, for young people who want to get married, the respect of the other, you know, and what a shame in our countries. I speak of Philippines, I can speak of Ireland, I can speak of Quebec. There are three in France. I haven't lived in France, but from what I hear, it's about the same. Our Catholic countries, these Catholic societies, which were the treasure, which was the beauties of the church nowadays, particularly these countries, it's so difficult to find virgin souls. So difficult. And you go to India, a Hindu country, and Sri Lanka, which is Buddhist, and I tell you, in these countries, which are pagan, a girl cannot marry if she's not a virgin. So in the pagan, when we hear these things, we're ashamed of our country. You know? So this is something to teach this beauty of a purity. And I've heard again, somebody that was in France, with this young lady who's saying, well, I'm keeping myself pure for my husband. Which is noble, which is the way it should be. And so, consequence, remove the dangers and the obstacles to purity. And that's the obvious consequence. firmly, firmly, firmly. He who plays with fire will get burned. And frequent sacrament, a real solid sacramental life, and penance, the love of little sacrifice. Ninthly, just two more little points, to acquire the sense of responsibility, how to become more mature by being in charge ourselves, having responsibilities, and on others. I hope you do that in your homes with your children, even if it is to take the garbage out or feed the dog or whatever it is. Today is their night for the dishes or whatever. Some responsibilities, something first they have to do on things. Later on, it will be on their brothers and sisters. You teach your, help your child learn, help your sister to learn her catechism and help whatever responsibility on others in the school and classroom. There is such in the youth groups, scouts or whatever. I mean, there's one has responsibility over another. That really strengthens and builds the response, the maturity. Because you realize people are looking up at you. People are depending on you. And it certainly helps. You become responsible. Finally, tenth point, to cultivate the spirit of sacrifice. To grow in the acquisition of maturity, to progress in all the aspects we have mentioned so far, one needs sacrifice. Constantly renewed effort. There is no other remedy to caprice, to idleness, to and the easy life. To strengthen the will. That's what we said throughout. Do you want? Jesus said, do you want to be perfect? Si vis perfectus est. Do you want? And so that's the will. The will must be strong and firm in order to reach the goal, and that is acquired by the spirit, habitual spirit of sacrifice, of self-denial, spiritual combat. You see, it's delicate, but it works, because that's how the saints have done it for 6,000 years. You know, the will is strong enough to discipline the body, sensuality, the passion, to resist the world. Firm, so it's strong, firm to persevere in whatever is started, but at the same time, docile to obey God and His representatives. The will can bow. It's not a, you know, pride. There's no room for pride. There's a danger of pride. Well, we all have it. But strong will be at the same time obedient. We'll know how to obey. We'll know the value of obedience. The notion of sacrifice is a profoundly Christian Catholic notion. The Christian has gushed it out from the pierced heart of Jesus on the cross. So we have, in order to live, to progress in Christian life, put in our life the sacrifice in the first place. The sense of duty, remembering the sense of our origin. There is no spiritual progress without daily sacrifice. There is no saint without heroic sacrifice. And of course, the love of God will be the first, the most powerful motor principle of all of this. And I would just like to finish, after having just gone over these advice of Father de Lagneau, finish with the little example of a girl, another girl, who never finished high school, who died very young. She died at 24, Saint Therese of the Child Jesus. She stopped school at 15, about 15 and 3 months. She had just turned 15. She went to a boarding school for about 2 or 3 years at the Benedictine Sisters. But at first, she was taught by her sisters. Then she went to a school between the age of, 9 and 12, something like that. Then she had problems in the school, because she was too good and the other girls were bullying her, whatever. So they took her back home. But Saint Therese, who, in the words of Saint Pius X, our saintly patron, is the greatest saint of modern times, is Saint Therese is a model, as we mentioned earlier on, to have a model of a mature soul. When she entered, she was 15. And of course, many of the older sisters were a bit despising her. The convent of Lisieux was not a model convent back in 1888. And but Thérèse, who was burning with zeal, walked in this convent. The rule was not kept. I mean, the Mother Prioress had her own cat. She had a cat. And there's a story of the cat where the mother would go and send somebody to buy some very good fish for the cat. And the sisters would get just the bits and pieces left. this story. And so silence was not always kept. I mean, it was kind of a lukewarm convent. And Saint Thérèse walked into that. Well, two of her sisters are already there. But Saint Thérèse had this will to become a saint. The will to give herself to save more souls. The will of hidden sacrifice. Why did she become a Carmelite? At first, when she thought of a vocation, she thought of becoming a missionary sister. She wanted to go abroad to foreign lands. But then, she really wanted to go to the summit of holiness. She was only 13, 14 when she was thinking of these things. It's her sister who recalls these things, Céline. And she says, well, if I become a Carmelite, if I hide myself in a convent, I will never see the fruits of my prayers and of my sacrifices. And that is hard. We always, you parents, you want to see the fruit of your labor with your children. You know, we priests, sisters, we want to see, you know, we're planting, we like to see something growing. But Thérèse says, if I go to a Carmel, I will not see it, and that will be another sacrifice. So therefore I can save more souls, let's go. And she didn't hesitate, she became a nun in order to make greater sacrifice. But although she was 15 when she entered, pretty soon the superiors realized she was very mature. Mother Marie Gonzague, the prioress, said more than once that she wanted Thérèse one day to become the prioress. She was the most apt to become the prioress in this convent. She said she cannot because she's only 19. But she said, at one time she was 17, she said, but she's like a 30-year-old woman. Another time she's 22, she's like if she's a 60-year-old nun at 22. Her judgment, her self-discipline, which was heroic when you read about it, on little things, on a word, on a controlling herself, controlling... is heroic, and that's the self-denial. And one of the books that fashioned the soul of Saint Thérèse of the Child Jesus is The Imitation of Christ. She knew it when she was 14 years old. She knew it by heart. They used to play games with one between the sisters. You know, they would quote a passage and say, what chapter and verse? And the Thérèse would just answer like this. She knew it. But that the whole Imitation of Christ is precisely self-denial. For God and for souls. And so, let us all work together. I think myself, well, I'll be praying for all of you and for all the work you're doing here, and you dealing with these souls. Keep all these elements together. I mean, education is a complex thing. It's difficult. There's joys and sorrows. You never know if all your children will turn out well when they, you know, when you see your children's children's children. Some people do, but some people don't. Families are scattered, and best families. I know families of Quebec, we have families of 10, 15, 19, 20 children, but I'm heartbroken when I go back to Quebec and I meet some of these parents with 10, 12 children, and they say, Father, I only have one left who practices his faith. And a traditional Catholic. And they put their kids, they either home-taught or put the kids in our schools. The world is powerful. That's why, you know, we really need to work together and hold here in your community, hold together because you know, demons out there are by the zillions. And if you don't work together to train these souls, so when they leave home, when they leave the school, maybe they go to a university somewhere else, go to London or go to New York or they're going to go God knows where. They'll be in a college with this new world around them. They must be able to resist to say, no problem, this is what I've been told, and I know where I'm going, what I want. And that will be the glory of your family, to have children who succeed, not just in life, but in their spiritual life and in their faith and so on. Okay, so thank you. Question.
Thinking about in Pius the 12th to the teachers.
Yes.
In the instance of quality, could you elaborate on them, perhaps?
I think the whole speech. I just gave you one line. The whole speech. He develops these various points. This is the conclusion of the allocution, like we do sometimes in a sermon. You just summarize the various points. He says, religious, honest. The honesty here, I would say, is the truthfulness. To be honest is to be true. Totally true. And to be real, in other words, the opposite is hypocrisy, and the opposite is liberalism, which is a split personality. I'm very good at home, but outside on the street, and I do what I want. So, this honesty, truthfulness, cultured, and that he developed that Pius X was certainly Pius XII. When you read his speech, he spoke to every type of science. And he wanted Catholics to be the leaders in all the branches. And in history, the Jesuits, the Dominicans, they have been the great brains, minds. Frank, the fourth one. Well, this is truthfulness in the speech particularly. And active. Idleness, as we have said, is the mother of all vices. God is pure act, and those who get close to God, they become active. You just want to do something. And it's in the gospel, the talent, the parable of the talent. We want to pass on to others what we have received. We want to fructify what we have been given. And we want to work. So whether it's in marriage, whether it is in the religious, whether so, active. But I think it would be interesting to have the whole talk, which is in this book here on education. Okay, good question.
A reference for that, Father. What was the...
Okay, well, this is the book by Solem, the monks of Solem, on education. It is September 4, 1949. Allocution to the Italian Catholic Union of Secondary Teaching. Italian Catholic Union of Secondary Teaching. And in this book, it starts with paragraph 500. The passage I gave you is 515, which is the conclusion. Okay, well, thank you very much, Selma. You will say prayer.